joined by a remarkable artist whose journey is as powerful as his music. Jacob Kulik is a singer, songwriter, producer, and multi-instrumentalist whose sound blends alternative rock with raw emotional storytelling. But Jacob's artistry is only part of what makes him extraordinary. Born with sensory neural hearing loss in both ears, he spent his life not only navigating the world of music with limited hearing, but is also thriving in it. From building a makeshift studio as a teen to singing with RCA Records and charting singles like Ghost, Jacob has defied expectations at every turn. He's also become a voice for the hard of hearing community, openly sharing his experiences with hearing aids, bullying, and the empowerment that comes from embracing who you are. We're honored to have him here today to talk about his creative process, how he's turned challenges into fuel for his music, and what it means to find strength in vulnerability. So Jacob, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We're excited to talk about your journey.
Of course, any opportunity I have to talk about this, I enjoy. And that was a great intro. I need to like write that down, tell myself that every morning.
Why don't you start by telling us how you got into music and how growing up and living with hearing loss shaped that journey for you?
So I started writing music and songs basically as journaling first. That was my songwriting beginning, but I actually started playing instruments. Like I started with drums really young. It might have been before I even knew that I had the hearing loss. And that was fun, but I started trying to like write songs and it was really difficult to sing over drums. So I was like, I'm going to try to learn acoustic guitar. So I started basically journaling and writing songs when I was in middle school. It's interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about it. My hearing loss didn't affect me that much because I didn't like accept it, or I didn't want to make it a thing that made a weakness of like, oh, well, I can't do this because I have this. I would always just pretend this is normal all the time. So for me with songwriting and with, you know, one thing I'll say is it definitely makes me like more powerful music. I like feeling the music. So definitely more rhythmic and things that I can like, you know, truly feel like louder music. But like whether that's hip hop or whether it's metal, I just like those styles of music rather than like, you know, softer music. But yeah, definitely started just from journaling and basically just trying to get my emotions and thoughts out. And it felt so good to sing. Like the feeling of singing felt so cathartic. So I was like, I'm hooked on this.
I wonder if you gravitated to drums because you could feel that instrument. And even if you didn't know you had a hearing loss at that point, that it just spoke to you more because of the feeling behind it, the physical feeling.
Yeah, I never thought about it. I think it was just the first instrument that I got. I know my uncle bought my first drum kit, and I think a lot of kids start on drums because it's easier than guitar. But I will say, like, producing music, even to this day, drums are my favorite over anything else. It's definitely my favorite. So, yes, definitely a possibility.
Can you tell us about the early days of when you were first diagnosed with hearing loss? And you said it took a bit of time to accept it. So what was your reaction when you were first diagnosed?
I don't mean this in a bad way towards my family at all. Like, love my mom, love my dad, love my brothers. But it was kind of like, I don't think they understood the severity of it, even till this day, where it's kind of like, yeah, like, because I was born with sensory neural hearing loss. And basically, the way I simply explain it to people is most people hear 20 decibels, I hear it 40. And my frequency response is like from mid-range and on. So mostly it's like the female vocal and up, like any T's and, you know, like S's. But when I say I didn't like acknowledge it or my reaction, my mom said one day she was like kind of talking to me from behind me and I wasn't turning around. She was like, that's interesting. And after like a week or two of noticing that, that's when she took me. I don't know how old I was. I think I was like 5 or something like that. And then she said the first thing I did when I had my hearing aids was I was like, oh, I hear birds. Like I couldn't hear birds chirping before that. And then after that, it was kind of like, all right, he has hearing aids. That's it. Like there was no like, I was never treated as a disabled person. And I personally think that's a huge strength. Like I'm not saying to ignore it, but there's something very positive about not viewing yourself as weak. Of like, I can do anything I can. Like, I can do whatever I want to do regardless of having this. I still feel that way to this day. But I will say now, I accept it way more where it's not like, I used to hide it as a kid where it's like, I don't want people to know that I have hearing aids and that kind of stuff. Whereas now I'm kind of like, I will literally say to someone I first met, hey, I'm hard of hearing. If I don't hear you, because I've been in too many situations where someone talks to me and I don't know, and then I just look rude. So I'm like, I'm going to tell you immediately. But yeah, when I was younger, I didn't really have a reaction to it because it was like one day I got hearing aids and then it was just normal life the rest of the time until basically I was 28 years old and I met with ReSound hearing aids and I was like, oh, I can like be an advocate of this and actually make it a part of who I am because it is who I am.
So you never really felt othered because of the hearing loss, that you just figured out a way to just exist as any other kid would, and that also, just worked for you.
Yes, and I wore my hearing aids on and off, but I didn't really start wearing them until I was like 27.
You had mentioned that you had been in touch with ReSound. How did that come to be that you started being an advocate, working with them, and then ultimately becoming a part of the New Norm campaign?
Yeah, that was lucky. I'm trying to think of the shortest story as possible with this, but basically—
Doesn't have to be short.
Doesn't have to be short.
Okay. So my music journey led me to, you know, from writing songs and not being able to sing on pitch because of my hearing loss to then finally learning how to do it after like 5, 6, 7 years. Then I started being in my own band and I ended up getting signed with RCA Records. I was with them for 2, maybe 3 years. And then I was published with Sony. So I've toured, I've done a bunch of stuff like that for like 2 or 3 years. COVID hit, left RCA, still with Sony, but wanted to keep making music. So I did and got a different deal. And then ReSound found my profile in music. And I just pretty much had in my bio, like, where's hearing aids or something like that. Like, I didn't even understand there was a world that talks about this. And they were like, you know, you would be perfect for this New Norm campaign. So they just reached out to me and I was like, I want to do way more of this, whatever this is. And I also have my degree in audio engineering. So like my bachelor's of science in that. So I was like, I want to try to work with a hearing aid company and whether, yeah, sure, I'll do all the public stuff. Like, cause I'm, you know, a cool musician who has hearing aids and all the kids will be fine to wear hearing aids. Like, I get that message. I'm cool with that. And I love being that person too. But that's basically what the New Norm was, because pretty much in every article when they talk about hearing aids, they always just pull up a really older person. And no matter what the article is about, it could be about teens not wearing hearing aids and it's an older person in the photo. So they wanted to basically make a public access folder of images that if someone does do an article that they can use younger people and people that maybe don't look like people you think would wear hearing aids, so that it becomes more normal for everybody to be able to wear them and see people wearing them.
So important. I actually just had a patient or two this week that specifically said they don't wear their hearing aids because it makes them look and feel old. And so people with a face like yours promoting it and normalizing it is important for the everyday patient to see.
I totally agree. It's just public perception. It's literally public perception. And I try to pick mine. Like mine are literally like black. Like, I'm not trying to hide it. It's like, I do like the new, like the sleek designs make them look way less antiquated. So I think that, like, I see a lot more people wearing them. Maybe it's just because I'm paying more attention to it now, but I really do see a lot more people wearing them. So I think the design is helping a lot.
Do you use any of the accessories with them?
Yes. I use, well, first the Bluetooth, which that's been around since even when I was in high school in 2010. That's been around, but you always had to use that necklace. You don't need to use that anymore. So that makes you not feel so much like you're disabled and more just like I'm wearing basically AirPods. That
you're using technology.
Correct. And I always said that to ReSound too. And any hearing aid company, it's like, that's how you sell it to young people, is you sell all the tech benefits. Like, I used a TV streamer. So if I'm watching TV, instead of blasting the TV or... Yeah, I mean, I don't really have to blast TV with my hearing aids in, but it's so much different when you have the audio in your ears.
Direct streaming.
And the way those apps work, it's amazing because you can listen to the TV and then you can still hear around you. It doesn't just shut it off. And you can also choose how loud is the TV, how loud is the person in your room, you know? So I use that and every now and then I use that, they call it the spouse mic, but it's a multi-mic. It's a microphone that you can kind of, like, the only time I've really used it is in really loud situations where I kind of only need to like hear whoever I'm with so they can kind of pass it around. But the TV one definitely helps, and the Bluetooth is great on the phone.
On a side note, with the mic, you could use it plugged into the computer right now to have that stream. But what we've done with patients is actually use it as part of an in-ear monitor system. So when somebody plays on stage and has hearing aids, you can connect the mic to the board and have it stream as though you're wearing in-ears to be a part of whatever the stage mix is that you'd otherwise get, which makes for its own conversation. But that's another interesting use of that, which leads to my next idea of what do you do for in-ears on stage and do you use in-ears?
Yeah, so that part I'm still figuring out because I never took this really seriously till like last year. I'm waiting on, I forget what they're called right now. So you have in-ears, it's connected to your pack. Right now I'm using basic in-ears that now I'm fully deaf basically because I have in-ears in. And unless someone's talking in the microphone, I can hear. So if there's a sound guy saying, hey, test the guitar, I'm not hearing it.
So there are in-ears, like there's a company, Sensophonics, that has in-ears that has an app that where you can customize to kind of work around your hearing loss. And I've also spoken with other monitor engineers talking about the idea of mixing on the board to account, like if you have your own mix independent from the other players on stage, that you could compensate for the loss within what the mix is.
I literally have never listened to anything with in-ears or headphones with my hearing corrected. So I'm so used to that. Uh-huh. Like my in-ears, my problem's not that. My problem is when I have the in-ears in and then the drummer's trying to talk to me, but he doesn't have a microphone. So now I got to pop an ear out, but I can't hear him because I don't have my hearing aid in. You see what I'm saying?
So how do you compensate in the moment?
Yeah. So the in-ears that I ordered, but they're on back order. I forget what they're called right now, but what they're supposed to do is when you press a button, it turns the outside world on.
So there's an ambient mic that it's
getting you access to. But it's with your hearing loss.
Okay.
So that's what I want to try. Right now, I literally just pop it out and I say, you got to talk really loud. But I'm trying not to pop them out because then if someone's testing something, like I'm trying to reserve, it's a very difficult scenario for sure. But I did try just doing a basic EQ graph on my mix alone, because like when we do live sound, we have our own rig and I have my own pack. Like I'm not relying on the venue. I have my own system, so I can make my own correction. But I've never heard music with headphones or AirPods or anything like that with my hearing corrected.
If you wanted to talk about a workaround with using your multi-mic, it's something we've done before, so we could have that side conversation
We definitely should. I've not had many conversations at the live. I've had conversations about the producing because I produce people for a living, really. And I mix with my hearing aids in on a music setting.
Yeah, I'd be curious if you plug the multi-mic into the board, even just for mixing and producing, if you felt like you'd ultimately be getting a better sound quality. It might require you to have custom ear molds on the hearing aids as opposed to domes, but that could be a way to really have it tailored to your loss, but get you the sound you need.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Going back to something you said earlier, you said you couldn't sing on pitch because of your hearing loss. And you taught yourself how? How did you teach yourself to do that?
Yeah, I always make a joke because, first of all, I don't even know if it was from my hearing loss. Maybe I was just a terrible singer.
come a long way.
Yeah, yeah. When I always make the joke because I had my brief story is I had a walk-in closet in my bedroom, and that makes my house unglamorous, but it was literally just a bedroom and a sliding glass door. I took that door off and made that a studio. So it was just a closet with like a mixer, and I would sing in there like every day for basically since seventh grade till I graduated, so 5 years basically. And my brothers are always like, you know, like you're good now, but man, was it brutal when you were first starting, because I would just sing loud and they would just, you know, they'd be like, dude, like can you try to do it like somewhere else? Or and I'm like, no, this is where I'm recording. And I still have like those old recordings. Like I definitely I just got better with practice, which I think anybody can do with pretty much everything to certain limitations, but I'm a firm believer in the mental over the physical. Even the hearing stuff, like that's what my whole life's been. Singing, producing. I mean, people, I get plenty of work. I've worked producing and doing my own music for my whole life. And, you know, I feel like people are discouraged if they like, oh, well, obviously I can't do music because I'm hard of hearing, or I can't do this because of my sight, or I can't. It's like, you can find ways for sure if you want to do it and you're passionate about it.
Did you ever encounter any other professionals where you felt like they were looking at your hearing loss as a roadblock to a professional relationship?
No, never. Only thing I ever get nervous about is if I'm going to produce an artist and they don't know me yet. If they already know that I'm hard of hearing and that I'm talking about producing, but I already have work I can show them. They're like, oh, okay, he knows what he's doing, so it's fine. You know what I mean? But I started not wearing my hearing aid, just telling people. Like, I'm not sure if I started like that, if it would have been like that. But honestly, too, this is sad, but, and I'm sure you are aware of this, but in the music industry, like, it is so common for people to have hearing issues, you know? And they just don't, they're just kind of like, oh yeah, I just worked forever and now I have hearing issues, and they don't do anything about it. They don't get a hearing test. They don't want to accept. The main problem, I think, with hearing education and getting people to actually accept their limitations with their hearing is that it's a morality thing. It's like, I'm getting older. My body is decaying. It's like, I don't think people like to accept that part. I'm fortunate that I had it young. So for me, it wasn't like, oh, I'm getting older now this, you know, but I understand that from certain engineers' perspectives for sure.
Is there a point in time where you became more comfortable sharing about your hearing loss with other professionals from the get-go? Is it something that happened more naturally, or was there just a point in time where you said, this is going to go a lot easier if I just am upfront about it?
I just started wearing my hearing aids because I wanted to hear my wife. So I wore them more, and then I started wearing them every day. And then I was like, oh, this is actually a part of what I do now. And being an artist and a producer, like, your whole thing is a brand. So I'm like, all right, let me just add this to what my brand is. Like, I'm big with mental health. I'm big with physical health and running. And then I was like, let me just add this to it. You know, like, let me also, like, I should be talking about everything that I've experienced with, so that somebody who doesn't have experience with this is taking up the space, you know?
Absolutely. Now, in your advocacy, one thing that we've always liked to explore within the podcast is where people may feel like they get to become a part of somebody's stories. For us, we get to assist our patients with their hearing loss, whether it's hearing aids, cochlear implants, that, hey, we're helping and we're getting to become a part of your hearing journey. Do you feel like there's been a time where you got to become a part of somebody's story?
I mean, it happens all the time. I've had some people that I produced where they literally came to me because they were like, yeah, I'm also hard of hearing and none of the engineers, producers get it. You know, so I've had somebody who was fully deaf in one ear that came to record with me. And then just random fans, like when I was on the road, there's a couple kids that like came up and they're like, oh, look it, I have these too. I'm like, yeah, you know? So yes. And then the biggest curveball, including not talking about the industry, is my little brother actually just had a baby, first in our family, and has almost the identical hearing loss that I have. And he's
really,
he's like 8 months old. So we're trying to, they're going to do genetic testing to see if it's genetic, but like, I'm going to be able to be an uncle and, you know, show him that it's not like, it's not the end of the world. Like, I was able to do stuff and, you know, you hearing it, so do I. And like, I'm hoping to be that cool uncle that it's like, oh, cool. Like, you know, but that I obviously don't wish that on anybody, but like, I'm like grateful that I'll be able to help him and help his wife and, you know.
Yeah. To be able to give that relatable perspective and that there's no reason this needs to hold you back. And one thing we've seen with our patients and with the other guests that we've had that have hearing loss is that it's led to a degree of resilience. For many people, it's been something to overcome. Maybe school was more challenging. Maybe there were social aspects that were more challenging. And it led to this inner strength that served them well as they got older. Do you feel like that's been the case for you?
100%. I think it makes everything, I think it teaches, I mean, listen, life is just a bunch of challenges and how you handle them. So for me, it made me be able to take on challenges and just be understanding and not stressed about it. It also made me more introverted and more introspective. I definitely pay more attention to how I'm feeling, what I'm thinking. Now that makes me more anxious. I'm aware of that. That makes me a little more depressed sometimes, a little secluded, also aware of that. But it made my awareness of every other sense higher, in my opinion. Like, I think that's the same for other people as well. If you're lacking in one thing, I think other senses are a little bit heightened.
Is there any anxiety before a live show of something going wrong where you may or may not be able to hear something, or as you said, communicate with the drummer or whatnot, because it's live, you can't stop and start as you want and things go wrong?
So for shows, no, but only because I designed the whole show and we play to a click track. So I'm aware, and I did that for that purpose. So there's no room for, like, it's like, you know, you just play to the backing track, and as long as you know that, you're fine. I'm never worried about cutting out anything. The only thing that does affect me is, like, I also just started coaching at a fitness studio. So, like, wearing a headset with the microphone with the hearing aids is really difficult because the headset sits here. And that part, like, for music, it's not as bad. It's more for everyday life. Like, when I have to talk to clients and it's in a really reverby room or something, and I'm like, okay, it's really hard to hear you now, you know? But for before shows, no, I'm just anxious about the show. I'm definitely anxious about the show, but nothing really with hearing. And I keep my hearing aids in until about 10 minutes before the show. And then when I take them out, I say, guys, I'm out. And I like to do, like, a little meditation myself anyway. So I'm like, 10 minutes, I just don't talk to me for the first 10 minutes.
At least they know.
Yeah.
You know, with the idea of taking them out before a show, I'm thinking of we had a conversation with an athlete who's a baseball player with significant hearing loss, and he would talk about not playing with them at certain times. And I wondered if it was something beneficial of, like, it creates this distance between you and the audience. Is there something for you in having them out and kind of living the hearing loss during your performance that you find advantageous or that makes the anxiety of playing more manageable?
Yes. I also feel way more, like, listen, the hearing aids are amazing, definitely helps, but I feel so much more myself. And I would even say primal, like, when I don't have them in, where I'm not worried about losing that. Like, I talk so much quieter with hearing aids in. And then when I perform, I take them out and I'm like, here I am, you know, it's like, I can do it for a little bit, you know? So definitely.
I feel like that's a common trend we've seen among some guests that we've had. Everybody kind of just wants their time to take them out and be one with the world or in your own zone.
Well,
it's authentic that way.
Yeah. So, and I also talked to the neuroscientist at Resound, and he said there's a reason for that, because your brain is becoming so, you know, it's a part of the brain that doesn't get used unless you wear your hearing aids, because you don't hear those frequencies. So you get tired. You want to take them out. And it doesn't mean tired, like, I want to take these out and go take a nap. It's like, it's exhaustion. Like, especially, like, before a show, I love that, because it's like, take them out and then I can exert all this energy that I'm usually reserving with my hearing aids in, because I'm not as, like, if I go a whole day without wearing these, I am so much, like, my voice is more hoarse, but I also get more out. It feels more like I worked out that day. Whereas when I wear them, it's like, okay, stay reined in here, you know, like, because I'm wearing microphones in my ears. Like,
yeah, it's an interesting thing, because on the one hand, when you have hearing loss, you have to work really hard to listen and understand and focus and try and catch the message. But on the other hand, when you're getting so much sensory stimulation, you can kind of get that sensory overload where you just want that break. So it's finding that balance between getting you what you need in a way that you can manage it and feel comfortable in that.
I also think that that is for every human being, whether you have hearing loss or not. Like, people who are autistic, to get overwhelmed, it's like, and same thing with if you have a really busy day at work, and, like, you need to, I think people with hearing loss, that's their superpower, is being able to really hone in on, like, all right, I know when I feel burned out, I know when I don't. I don't think people without hearing loss have that ability that well, because they're not paying attention to it, you know?
Yeah, that you're more dialed into what your body is experiencing in any given day, any given moment. Do you feel like there are things that your hearing loss has made easier for you? The world tends to think of like, oh no, hearing loss, all the negative repercussions of it. But are there, beyond the idea of resilience, are there things that you feel like, oh, this has really been a positive effect of my hearing?
Exercise, I enjoy that because anything that I have to do in my head. So exercise, running, I would say even like loud places, it's obviously better because, but I usually wear earplugs at those places. Like, you know, I would say like meditation, like that is easier. It's like I'm more, you know, I'm feeling like you're supposed to focus on your breath and like shut out the sounds. It's like, well, if I shut my eyes, I'm pretty much there focusing on stuff. If I'm trying to read a book or something, I'm not as distracted.
Don't we all wish we could turn off our ears at some point? Shifting over to your musical style, how do you feel your style has shifted or evolved over time?
I started with like straight pop and me singing. Now I'm in a band with my wife. It's called Maiasaura. It's spelled Maiasaura. It's a metal band. It's loud. She's also a very loud Italian from New York. It matches. Perfect. But the songs are still like, I'm still just trying to write hit songs. Like I love pop songs. So I still think I'm making the same exact type of song, just hidden in hard rock now, instead of it sounding more like soft pop.
Yeah. Cause your music catalog sounds very eclectic, that there's a wide range of what you do and audiences that you could speak to in your music.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of like even taking a break with like my Kulik stuff personally, because producing other people, I just started doing that in like 2019. So when I started doing that, I was like, oh, I produce all genres. Like I do everything. So it's not like usually producers only focus on their one specialty. So I was like, I don't even know what I want to make. I like making all of this. And it actually made it a little more confusing for me. But the Maiasaura project, I'm like, I know what I'm doing with that. And that's been really fun lately. So I'm like, I'm just going to focus on that. And that's honestly me and my wife's project. Like I sing on that. She sings on it. I scream on it. Like I play guitar. So yeah.
When artists bring you in on a project and they want you to produce, are you looking to kind of leave your mark on the work, or are you seeing where you can just kind of subtly steer things to get them to their vision?
I see. Go off of what the artist wants. But the order of it for me is, what should the song do? What does the artist want? Do they want me to add what I do? Mm-hmm. So they're not coming to me because it's like a lot of people do come to me because they're like, all right, your drums hit really hard. I really want that sound or whatever. But usually it's, you know, they're going to have their song. I'm going to say, all right, this is how I hear this. Is this how you hear it? Yes. Cool. Now I also think we should do this to make it a little different.
Is there anything you've produced that you've been particularly proud of?
Definitely all of the Maiasaura stuff. And my whole record of Yelling in a Quiet Neighborhood, like those are definitely the two that I'm most proud of. There's this song called Bite the Bullet by Maiasaura that we just released that that's my favorite one so far. Just because they're a little more unique. I'm definitely proud of other things I've produced for other people as well. But they're just usually in genres. Like a lot of, like I produced the song Creek by Ali Walker. It is very successful, but it's just country. So like I'm a good engineer and I know how to make pop country, but I don't know country necessarily. So, but I'm definitely proud. I'm proud of every single thing I've ever produced, to be honest with you.
Are there some bucket list artists that you would love to work with that you maybe haven't had a chance to yet?
As a producer?
Producer or collaborating musically?
As a producer, no. I wouldn't want to produce anybody else who's already established because they should have their own team probably. Mm-hmm. But as an artist, I would love to work with somebody like a Limp Bizkit. Yeah, like all the people that I really liked, they're not like the same style. Like I love Tom Petty. He's not around, obviously. The people that I really looked up to, like they're not exactly what I make. Mm-hmm. Love 21 Pilots. But yeah, no dream collaborator. I love Falling in Reverse. They're also a heavier band, but they're also cool. Oh, you know what? I lie. It's a Day to Remember. That band. It's a Day to Remember. Okay. It's a Day to Remember. That's the first band I actually listened to where I was like, I want to make music.
Any advice you would give for somebody who's looking to break into this business?
I would say to not put all of the weight on it. If you put too much pressure on it, like, because this industry changes so often. If you ask me that question in 2018 or 2020 or 2022 or now, the answer is always different. Like, what works? The TikTok algorithm changes. Like, now you're not just like writing a song and just going for your dream. It's like you're a video editor, you're a video creator, you're an analytics expert. So you know your numbers. Like, there's so much that can overwhelm you. So the two recommendations would be, don't put so much weight on it. Like, not like I'm an artist and that's it. Like, I hate when people say, like, don't have like a backup plan. It's like, right now, yes, no backup plan, but you can have three plans happening at the same time, you know, to help your career instead of just going all the way in, you know. And that doesn't mean that you're anything less than being real. You know, there are people that I know that have become massively successful, and they became successful when they were working like three jobs. Like, it's okay. So that would be my recommendation of, like, don't take it so seriously and just have fun making the music, because there's no rhyme or reason of if something is successful. And your successful level will change with the success you get. You'll always want more. So try to just enjoy making it.
And speaking to that idea of advice, is there advice you would give your younger self?
It's not the answer to, like, be this image that's greater than yourself. Like, you're just great how you are. And that's what makes the image greater than itself. It's not like trying to be this cool. I think there's so many people that, especially famous people, that do that. And then they get stuck being that character. And then they become mentally ill and they become depressed because they're like, I'm not who this character is. That kind of happened to me a little bit with the RCA stuff. And I was like, I don't like that at all. I don't like that feeling.
How do you find your way out of that professionally to take care of yourself, but then also recognize that this is part of your livelihood?
Yeah, it's definitely taking time off. Mm-hmm. It's definitely taking time away and then rediscovering yourself as a person. Because if you work too much, Miley Cyrus talks about this a lot with touring so much. If you tour all the time, you now no longer have a real life. So now you don't know who you are. And if you did that for 2 years, now who have you been for 2 years? Like, there's no roots, and your foundation starts to crumble because you haven't been taking care of it. You haven't been looking at it. Like, it's, you know what I'm saying? You're just building a skyscraper, and you got to keep coming down to the basement to, like, check on things.
And stay grounded.
Yes. Is there a way, or how easy or challenging is it for you to have that, I'm going to call it, work-life balance of making sure you take that time away while also progressing in your career?
I think that it will never get easy, but I know practices of how to do that now. Like, I can do meditations and do reflections and journal and do all these things where you take time to yourself. And most of the days I don't want to do it, but I'm like, if I don't do this, I'm skipping this day, and then I'm skipping this week and this month, and now I didn't take the time. So like even after this, like, I'm going for a half hour run. It's my own time to disengage. I'm not on my phone. I'm doing a specific, like, in my head, thinking about, you know, reflecting for a half hour while running. Like, so there's things that I do that ground me. Sometimes that's talking to my family, you know, but just specifically for myself, it's that, and also just reflecting on, you know, my life over the years.
It sounds like it's really an active process to stay grounded and keep yourself where you want to be and where you need to be in what you're doing professionally.
And even just not professionally, just personally. Like, I, with the amount of anxiety that I've always had, yeah, like, it's mental work. It's the same thing as physically working out. It is the same exact thing. And I think I was drawn to this because of my hearing loss, because I'm in my head more. But I never have viewed it as a disability. I've never viewed it as this negative thing, because life, there is no normal life. No one's handed this perfect hand. Sure, there's some that are close to it, or you may look at it and think that's the case, but Even the most beautiful rich people have these mental health issues. And even these people who are some, you just never know. There's no like perfectly made human being. So I don't, you know, like I don't believe in giving up because of a disability.
You have a good attitude about it.
You have to. You have to. You absolutely have to. Because the other option is to lay down and give up. So.
That does not work.
No.
Yeah.
Or at least not in a good way.
I've done that too. You know, I've been there before too. I don't do that.
So when that does happen for you, how do you find your way out of that space?
Doing the practices that I don't want. Usually that happens when I get busy and I can't do those things. And then I get overwhelmed. And then I have like a day or two and I'm like, all right, I got to start the morning routine again. I got to start going for a walk every morning. And then I slowly build it up. And then I'm like, all right, I'm back to being good. But I recognize it and I don't go, you know, I'll give myself a little bit of time, be like, all right, just feel in this for a little bit. But I know in my heart and head when I'm like, all right, it's been too long now, you know?
So really it goes back to that idea of being introspective that you talked about before, of really kind of being in touch with what you're experiencing. And
you have to be paying attention to your own life. No one else is paying attention to it. So if you're, you know, sleeping until 11 a.m. 5 days in a row, you got to notice. And if you don't, you're not even going to know you're depressed. And then you go to the doctor because you're sick and they're going to say, oh, well, are you stressed? And you're going to say, yeah, I guess I'm stressed, but I'm not sure why I'm so sleepy. And you're sleepy because you're probably not paying attention to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Self-awareness goes a long way.
Yes, it is so important. So important.
So my last question for you is, what's on the horizon next? What are you working on? What do you have coming up in the next couple months?
Yeah. So my band, Maya Sora, we're releasing a song every month. We have a new one coming out tonight, actually at midnight.
Good timing.
Called 86. Yeah. Yes, it is. Called 86. A single every month. It's a brand new product. We just launched it in January. It's doing pretty well. I'm coaching some fitness stuff. I'm still working on my own music, but I don't know when I'm releasing that or what it's going to even sound like. I'm trying to make that a pretend I'm never going to release it and just make whatever I want. So, but yeah, it's mostly just the Maya Sora stuff for right now.
And I'm curious about for my last question, when you decide which guitars you're going to play, are there specific guitars that you go to? What's your favorite acoustic to go to and your favorite electric to go to?
Yeah. So first of all, I never liked the electric guitar, which is hilarious. I still don't necessarily love it. I don't do any like lead licks or solos or anything. It's all just like low notes for that rock band for Maya Sora. But I love acoustic. I love the way it resonates against your body. And then I can sing and feel that. I've always been an acoustic person. I usually pick up my Taylor. It's a Taylor 314 CE. It is bright. It's the brightest guitar I've ever played. I like it for that reason because I'm missing highs. I can
play. Taylor is good for that.
Yes. And I can play that without hearing aids and still feel like I can really, like when I write, I usually write without my hearing aids because I want to really feel what I'm singing. I can't really sing loudly with hearing aids in. So definitely go for an acoustic. Doesn't have to be a Taylor. I have some Martins too, but those two. And then the electric, I love any Fender or any a Charvel guitar, which is made by Fender.
It just one thing you had touched on there with your writing, and you said early on that when you first were experiencing your hearing loss, that you would journal and that was something for you. And then now writing, do you find that you have music that comes from your journaling now, or are they two separate things for you?
Yes, songs come from the journaling, but I always write it in a journal fashion. And then I go, now trim the fat. And okay, how can I make this a catchy pop song? A lot of the time I write the whole song in 5 minutes and then I'm like, okay, cut it down, get rid of this, repeat these words because this was the best part I wrote. Song's done. I also write another way, which is, you know, more like a puzzle where it's like, all right, someone comes in with, I want to write a song with the hook that says this, body like a back road. Okay. And then now we got to write this, you know, but those aren't my favorite.
It's more when it just kind of pours out of you and there it is.
Yes. Yes. Like there are some Maya Sora songs that both me and April wrote that we wrote them together in like 5 minutes where it's just like,
wow,
this is how I feel. This is how you feel. This is how I feel. This is how you feel. All right. This is the coolest part. This is the chorus. This is the verse. This is the pre. Done. And honestly, songs are formulas. Like it's like baking a cake over and over and over. Like, you know how many eggs you need, you know how much flour, you know all this stuff. So now it's not overthinking at all. It's like, let's write some really cool short thing and then just cram it into 2 minutes and 30 seconds and get out of here.
Sometimes it's just natural like that. Wow.
So why don't you tell everybody where they can connect with you and your music and your different projects?
Sure. So I am just Kulick Official, KULICK Official. That's everywhere. And then my band with my wife is Maya Sora, and that is MAIASAURA Music, Maya Sora Music. If you just search Maya Sora Music on Google, it'll come up.
And we'll link to all those in the episode description. Jacob, thank you so much for taking your time to come on Hear Us Out, sharing your story with hearing loss, your musical journey, and we look forward to hearing what's coming next from you.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Have me back whenever.
Awesome. Thanks.
Awesome.